They listen and they speak, right? As they should hear.
That's right.
How do you say it will be all right when you know that might not be true? Children will listen. Children will see and learn. Adults too, we listen, we see and learn. What are we teaching? What are we doing? What things that we were taught are we trying to unlearn? How do we build a new way? We're talking today about masculinity, about men and maleness, which means we're talking about things that are hard to talk about. Talking about things that are heavy and real. Raymond Carver says of his friends, things are not going well for them right now. Or perhaps they are going better than ever because they are talking about things of consequence, things that matter. Do you feel that way as a society right now? That things are not going well? Except maybe, in a way, they are, because we're talking about things that matter. And it's hard, but it matters. It is of consequence. And maybe there's a new way, and we're building it. Children are listening and watching. We are listening and watching. Do you feel that way as a person, too? That when it comes to gender and power and fear and violence and healing and matters of the heart, that things are not going well for you? But maybe things are going better than ever because you're dealing with things that matter? Maybe. Joseph Campbell, whose work on mythology inspired not just Robert Bly's classic Iron John, but also George Lucas's Star Wars, Joseph Campbell wrote that the cave you fear to enter holds the treasure you seek. The cave you fear to enter holds the treasure you seek. So I want to ask you to come with me to enter the cave. I don't know that we'll walk out with the treasure, not in a single hour, maybe not in a lifetime. But I know that if we don't work on this, we will remain stuck, personally and socially. Before we start spelunking in this cave, however, I want to give a few safety instructions, how to put on your gear. First safety instruction, the question of masculinity is always intersectional and cultural. What it means to be male is different in different cultural groups, for different generations, for different economic classes. It's tied in with ability and income and religion, and it's tied to sexual orientation and gender identity and your own personal history, of course. There's no universal masculinity across time and space. Even the little things change. I decided this morning to wear my pink shirt because 100 years ago, pink was a color only for men. It was a masculine color. Marketers decided to flip it. There's no universal masculinity across time and space. That's a small example. So if you have to interpret these questions, and you will in an intersectional way for yourself, do. But breaking open the box of masculinity and noticing its variety isn't just a safety instruction before we go into the cave. It's also the first way that we can begin to form less toxic men, to provide more freedom, to see the beauty in difference, instead of forcing everyone to conform to one version of being men. Just like third wave feminism embraces lots of different ways to be a woman, non-toxic masculinity will affirm many ways to be a man. Second safety instruction. Some folks don't identify as men or women. I do not want here to reify a gender dualism, because that very gender dualism is one of the toxic things we want to challenge. I want to affirm right now that men and women aren't the only genders, that gender is complicated, and that each person's naming and claiming of their gender should be honored. Doing that helps us break the toxic hold of masculinity. And sometimes, at least among us liberals, our appropriate caution about this means we have a hard time talking about being men. That because we can't draw a clear line or we don't want to offend or exclude anyone, we don't discuss it at all. And that's a problem. In a way, talking about masculinity is like talking about whiteness. Our society says that white is normal and that everyone else has a race, but white people don't have a race. That's false. Our society says that man is normal, and indeed, that's the way language has often worked, right? Man means everyone. Some people still assert that, and that thus only people who are not men have genders. This is nonsense. This is false. And it's also deeply unhelpful, because what is unnamed, unexamined, can fester and have a power on us that we don't mean for it to have, because it's unconscious. We're conducting and not paying attention. So by talking about masculinity, I don't want to erase anyone else. I want to shine a light in the cave where we often fear to dread. With those two safety instructions, in we go. I know that there are men out there who are happy and satisfied with toxic masculinity. There are men who aren't interested in equality, who don't want to grow or challenge patterns of violence, oppression, and power. Some of them are well known and famous to us. There are some men I know who think suffrage was a mistake, that date rape is a myth, and that women's responsibility for all the emotional labor is appropriate, barefoot in the kitchen and all that. I know there are men out there who think that way, and their behavior is destructive and hurtful. These men might exist in your families, I'm sure they do. In your workplaces, I know they live in your neighborhoods. You may have long histories with them. I've met a few of them, I'm sure, in passing. But honestly, I don't know that many. That's not the circle I run with. When I was a kid, my Unitarian Universalist church taught me to speak up against sexist jokes and behavior. They were careful what they taught their children. I spent most of middle school saying, "That's not funny," to people who would tell jokes. Over and over and over again, "That's not funny." Recently, though, I have to tell you, I have been wondering, hearing stories about groups of guys who got together in high school and partied and did things, experiences I never had. I wonder how much my failure to conform to the rules of toxic masculinity, even at age 11 and 12 and 13, cost me friendships. Maybe it's one reason I was so lonely back then, and why most of my male friends to this day are other liberal ministers. So it's not the men who embrace patriarchy as the natural order of things that I want to talk about today. It'd be easy to point a finger at them, and there are plenty of targets to say, "Grow up and stop it and knock it off." It's too easy. No, I want to talk about the rest of us men, the people I know, I think all the men in this room too, those of us who are trying to resist that system and sometimes paying the price for it. Those of us who are trying to build a new way, because our conscience and our love calls us to do so, trying to teach our own boys to read all the books, trying to figure out how to live differently in a world that's confusing and where there are both gains and losses when you try to be a different kind of man. So I want to tell you about some men I know, men who are trying to be less toxic. The quiet conversations we sometimes have bring them out into the open. I know a man, more than one actually, who is working hard on not being such a Mr. Fix-It when it comes to feelings. When someone says to him, "I feel bad or sad or mad or hurt or anxious," one of those feeling words, he's working on saying, "I hear you. I care for you. Tell me more if you want to." Instead of saying, "Have you tried X, Y, or Z?" or "I have a book for you to read, the 5-step guide." This is hard. He wants to be helpful. And fixing problems is how he knows to be helpful. It's what he's been trained to do. A middle ground he's trying out is asking the question, "Do you want empathy or advice?" He said that once to a girlfriend, and she replied, "I want the empathy today and the advice tomorrow." She was very wise. And that's what he did, and they were both happy with that. He's working on not fixing other people's emotions, but what's even harder, a lot harder, it turns out, is not fixing his own. That's the real challenge. He doesn't know what to do with emotional distress, with any strong emotions at all. He wants to fix them. Isn't there a 5-step guide? And being empathetic to his own heart, binding his own wounds, that's even harder. It's not just his own work inside himself, though. He gives advice to others, tells them to buck up, but when someone does it to him, it's a different experience. Once he asked that same girlfriend for empathy, "This really hurts, I'm having a hurt feeling," he said, and she said, "Well, fix it." Men's emotional distress and strong feelings are troubling to many men, internally and externally, and they're often troubling to many women, too. Every man I know who has tried to live a more emotionally in-tune life, to express their feelings instead of holding them in until they become rage, and rage is the one feeling toxic masculinity allows, every man I know who's tried to do this has been at least once, if not hundreds of times, undercut, attacked or belittled by both other men and by women. Man up. Children, listen. This is why, from all the stories that Lindsay shared with me about gender roles, and there were dozens we could have chosen from today, and it's good there are so many, there were only a few when I was little, which wasn't that long ago, Big Bob and Little Bob and Blossom spoke to me the most. Because it's both boys and girls, right, who have learned it from us, they listen well, who enforce these rules. It's not just men. It's both men and women who enforce these rules. Breaking free from toxic masculinity isn't just the work of men. It's mostly our work, but it's not just our work. People who are not men need to be okay with men having feelings, with not fixing things, with not always being strong. Because the way that children's story ends, where they're all playing together in their own way, that's the world we want, right? We want both of the Bobs and Blossom to be welcome, to be included, to be free as they are. I love the way at the end that little Bob sees Blossom's shame. After she's been attacked by Big Bob for enforcing a rule that Big Bob was enforcing at the beginning of their friendship. Nothing like the woke attacking the still asleep, is there? And little Bob steps in to welcome her back. What's your name? That's building a new way. If we spend our time attacking each other for being too masculine or not enough, or too judgmental or not enough, or too emotional or not enough, then we won't learn to be free, free to be our best and truest self. Another man I know, he's a good man. He's trying hard to go another way, to be less toxic, but he has a very particular version of the Mr. Fix-It problem, the go-it-alone syndrome. Any of you have the go-it-alone syndrome? It's okay, put your hands up. I see a few tentative ones. He thinks inside that his worth as a man is about providing, taking care, being in charge. A good man doesn't need help to change a tire, or pay the bills, or run the meeting, or repair the world. I do it myself. Even now, our hearts are wary of the friend we need so much. Even now, our hearts are wary. Marge Piercy says in one of her poems that in the world of freedom and community where we see each other and we are fully ourselves, she writes, men need to learn to stop dancing solos on the ceiling. These words resonate with some of us. But for this particular man who's trying not to go it alone, all his life, competence was rewarded and neediness was punished. You figured it out all by yourself. Good job. Children, listen. He's so independent. Children, listen. But this man, he's trying, not just getting better at asking for help, for advice. That's one thing, right? Help me figure out what to do on my own. He's actually getting better at asking for people to help him solve the problem, which is a whole nother thing. It's hard. There are few more liberating and terrifying words than I need. It's liberating because it frees us from the illusion of independence and moves us to the truth of interdependence. And it's liberating because someone will say, how could anyone ever tell you you were anything but beautiful? Can't you see how closely you are connected to my soul? It's liberating because someone will say that. It's also terrifying. It's terrifying because when you say, I need, someone else will say, what's wrong with you? You're weak. Take responsibility for yourself. Someone will say that. And every man in this room knows that somewhere deep inside us, something ancient and evolutionary reacts to those words and that feeling in a primal way. This is deep in the brain stem, with anger, with withdrawal, with lashing out, and sometimes with violence. It gets at our sense of survival, that if we're not strong enough, will be abandoned and rejected, and that rejection feels like death. Worse even, better to die with honor than to be weak, right? Children, listen. So part of what we need is to show each other more compassion, more care. And part of what we need to do is to redefine our terms. Strength isn't the ability to go it alone. Strength is the capacity to build and be part of community. That's what takes strength. Can you bring anybody with you? Responsibility isn't taking care of it all by yourself. Responsibility is the ability to be responsive, to work with others to solve the problem. This is a big shift, huge, millennia worth. The shift of hearts and words and minds. It's about imagining a different kind of warrior. Robert Bly's Iron John, which was published when I was 13 years old, was a kind of touchstone to many men of my dad's generation. And I saw some of you raise your hand when I asked if you read that book. Some of you. There were drum circles and camping trips. I remember a whitewater rafting trip that I think was also supposed to be a coming-of-age experience for me and some of my dad's friends' kids of the same age. Attempts to figure out how to nurture a warrior who knew how to play. A hero who brought people together in common work, not by conquering, not the old model, but one who knew that in the cave we fear lies the treasure we seek. But what happened to that moment? Well, one thing, it was very few of them. And also society pushed back, still pushing back. It's hard. Some sustained it, some of you did. I'll tell you that among the people in this room are some of the people who inspire me to keep trying to be a less toxic man. Some of you who have made that hero's journey and found the treasure and kept at it, shared it. But many people never took the first step. They never went in the cave. They never even turned to look at it. And others who went in stopped when the costs, the loss of friendship, everything else, felt larger than the gains. It's hard. I think that if we say toxic masculinity must go, it's like saying white supremacy must end. Well, yes, absolutely. But saying it doesn't make it so. And doesn't deal with the way in which these systems work to reward compliance and punish deviation, to shape our very hearts. Things are not going well for us right now. Oh, Mesopotamia. Maybe things are going better than ever because we're talking about things of consequence. Secrets that were kept for too long are finally being told. Wounds are uncovered, but in the fresh air, they might finally heal. We are building a new way. And it's really hard. Building a new way of being interdependent and free at once, connected and diverse, loved and loving, heart-centered and open. This new way is the world we seek, the treasure. But we can't get there without going in the cave. Can't get there without going in. And I'm scared because I don't know how to fix it. And I need your help. And it's okay to say that out loud. In fact, actually feels pretty good to say that out loud. So maybe the men in the room would like to repeat after me. I don't know how to fix it. I need your help. Maybe we can all say that, everybody together, because it's not just true of men, right? I don't know how to fix it. I need your help. See, we can do it. We are building a new way. A way where we bind each other's wounds again, where with love that casts out fear, we see how beautiful everyone is, how much we need to be loved and to love. How much we need to do work that matters. How much we need to feel and be noticed. How much we need to dance and get real. If we wish to form a world with less toxic visions of masculinity, then what we must do, all of us, is to see ourselves and each other as beautiful, loving, complicated, needy, wounded, hopeful, anxious, loving persons. In other words, to practice the central teaching of our faith, that every night a child is born is a holy night, and that every child, every person, is holy, loving and lovable, wounded and healing, never enough by themselves, and always enough in the embrace of radical love. It will be hard, we know, but the children are listening. They're watching, reading, and learning. And there's after them, and there's after them. The treasure, freedom, and connection, the treasure we long for awaits. Start with love, that is the seed. Let us find the new way, the courage to take it, and companions for the journey. Let us sing, rise in body or in spirit.